This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Governor Pat McCrory and his Democratic rival Roy Cooper shared the stage again yesterday. It wasn't technically a debate, but that didn't stop them from sparring about a number of issues, including House Bill 2. Also, the latest polls indicate good news for Democrats and Libertarians. Meanwhile, candidates in Council of State races will debate next month, and the down-ticket effects of Donald Trump could have an impact on the General Assembly. Here to provide an update on various recent political stories, Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff DeBerry. Welcome back, Jeff.
Nice to see you, Frank.
Let's talk about that event at Pinehurst yesterday. Governor McCrory, Pat Cooper, speaking to business owners. They were going to talk about economics, but inevitably, if you're talking about the state's economy, it's going to turn to HB2, right?
It is with both of these candidates, and I think that as we've talked about on this program before and in other places, November 8th is going to some extent, become a referendum on HB2. And this was a forum before business owners in Pinehurst, yet both of them pivoted to HB2 and did it during their remarks yesterday. The economy is a big issue in pretty much any election. It will be in this issue. Governor McCrory ran 4 years ago on this stump of a Carolina comeback, and that's what he was proposing to bring to the state. And even as that takes shape, as we talk about this Carolina comeback, what that entails and how things have changed over the last 4 years, the effects, the perceived or real effects of HB2, how that has changed the mindset of voters or is affecting folks going to the polls, it is part of this social issue. This social contentious bill is going to be part of this economic conversation moving forward.
The governor himself points to the numbers in defense of what he calls the Carolina comeback.
We've had one of the largest drops in unemployment in the United States of America in 3 years. The second thing we did was paid off $2.6 billion of debt to the federal government. And the third thing we did, as of 3 months ago, I built up the reserves to $1 billion, and now your unemployment taxes are going down. We're charging you less for unemployment after I build up the reserves. That is the responsible thing that government must do.
All right, so there's Governor Pat McCrory speaking yesterday at the Summer Leadership Conference in Pinehurst, and of course, Pat Cooper had a response.
Roy Cooper did have a response. Quickly, two quick notes on McCrory. One, the unemployment has dropped across the country. It has dropped greater here than it has in other places, but the employment numbers have improved across the United States. Also, just on that, he said, I built up the reserves to $1 billion. That's actually a function of the General Assembly as part of the budget and something that he supported, but he did not do that himself. But yes, Roy Cooper also spoke yesterday, and this was part of his remark.
You go ask most everyday working people in North Carolina whether they have seen a Carolina comeback. Most of them will tell you that they are working longer and harder and for less money than they did before the recession. And the statistics bear that out.
All right, so there we go. Roy Cooper responds. By the way, I think I called him Pat Cooper a second ago.
It's okay.
Blending both candidates. But also, this was a comedian back in the 1960s who reflected Italian-American heritage.
Interesting.
Pat Cooper not running for governor in the state of North Carolina. But it's going to be interesting because it's going to come down to this, whether it's a statistical analysis of how things have gone from a recession, so you
right.
will have a big drop in unemployment
sure.
from a high rate down to what is a normal rate reflected all across the country, and whether or not some of the things that have happened, like reducing the debt, which helps people in the upper income levels who invest in who are investors or banks, but not necessarily those of us who are debtors. Those of us who carry debt not necessarily help. So Roy Cooper's point, how did you feel the so-called comeback? Not how is it reflected in the numbers? And this to me, would you say, will be how things play out in the election in the coming months?
It's going to also be interesting to see how Cooper goes after this notion of a Carolina comeback. To your point, what is this and what metrics are being used to measure a comeback? Are we also going to look at, rates of poverty or education or infrastructure? What else encompasses a Carolina comeback? It's, it's a catchy campaign phrase for certain, but it's also this euphemism that could stretch many different ways. So that could be used to either candidate's advantage, will be used to both candidates' advantage for the next 2.5 months.
And HB2, of course, fits into this because of the number of companies employees who now are not recruiting to North Carolina, big companies with high-paying jobs. And, of course, what we've seen and what the other statistics and analysis has shown is that the jobs that replaced those that were here before the recession are generally lower-paying jobs and more temporary jobs that have fewer benefits. And the high-paying jobs with big corporations and diverse workforces, they may not be coming as quickly because of HB2.
Yeah. And to expound a little bit on that point, what we're seeing is this divide. It's an urban-rural divide, both economically and HB2, right? So a lot of the jobs that we are seeing come to the state, the better jobs are typically in Mecklenburg and Wake County. These are also places where HB2 is, House Bill 2 is as disliked or more disliked than anywhere else in the state. You get into the rural areas, the jobs have not come back as plentiful. They have not come back with as high wages. And these are also the areas where there's, you know, more of a split on who favors and does not favor HB2.
So we're talking about the top of the ticket here in the state of North Carolina, the Republican Party. Within that party, there are concerns about how Donald Trump is going to affect the GOP majority in the U.S. Senate, of course, but down ticket races as well. Concern about the effects on the way Donald Trump might affect the General Assembly in North Carolina. Tell us about that.
Yes. So 50 seats in the North Carolina Senate. There's not as much concern from Republicans there or the thought that many seats will shift. However, on the House side, there are 120 seats. Presently, there are 74 Republicans, 45 Democrats, and one independent who caucuses with the Republicans. So this gives the Republicans 75 seats. Doing a little math here, a supermajority in the House means 72 seats or more. A supermajority is relevant because that means the lawmakers of the General Assembly have the Republicans, have the votes to override any veto that Governor Pat McCrory casts. So if it's a budget, if it's a social issue, if it's a gun measure, whatever it may be, the governor can say, whoa, that goes too far. And the Republicans at the General Assembly have then been able to say, okay, we have the supermajority. We're going to undo the governor's veto. The Senate also has one of these. That's not threatened. What has happened because of these economic issues and the HB2 contention that we talked about a moment ago, there are a number of seats in Wake County and in Mecklenburg County that strategists and experts and pollsters and political scientists say are in play. And several I've talked to say that they believe they're going to go back to the Democrats, meaning that the Republicans could lose this supermajority. So Republicans will continue in almost likelihood to they'll continue to have a majority in the North Carolina House, but they won't have a supermajority. That's a possibility. It's possible they lose it. And that's very significant, Frank, because if the governor's race goes to Cooper, he can then veto things. He can veto things at whatever length he likes. And the Republicans don't have the ability to go above and beyond him. So it kind of shifts the pendulum, if you will.
Well, let's talk about what the polls are saying about Cooper's chances and the governor's chance to retain his seat. According to public policy, a survey by Public Policy Polling, Cooper leads his incumbent by a point. Tell us more.
So that's one survey. Another survey that came out last week from Marist, NBC, and Wall Street Journal has Cooper up 7. I think conventional wisdom is that this race is still close. We're talking about a Republican incumbent. And we should note a Republican incumbent or an incumbent for governor has never lost re-election in this state. That only goes back 40 years or so since state law was changed. But Governor McCrory is in an odd position in that he has often been looking up, even if only slightly in the polls in this race. He has been running like somebody who is the challenger. He's been calling for more debates. He's been a little bit more aggressive in his rhetoric. Based on the polls, it seems like this race is leaning toward Cooper at this point. But of course, there's a lot of time left. We're expecting a lot of money to come in from national groups and PACs. There are only 12 governor's races in the nation this year, and this is by far the most interesting and the most competitive.
Well, down the ballot as well are the Council of State races, Attorney General, Labor and Agriculture Commissioner, and State Treasurer. Tell us about those races. There are going to be some debates, huh?
Yeah, and these are significant. I think the influence of these sometimes gets lost in the hyperbole and the hoopla of what's happening at the top of the ticket. Just to touch on a couple, and we found out this week that the details have been finalized for a series of forums in September. There are going to be debates between the major party candidates. There are not libertarians running for these Council of State races. Attorney General. This is the race to replace Roy Cooper because he is the current Attorney General. It's between Josh Stein and Buck Newton, both of whom have been members of the Senate. Josh Stein is has done a very good job fundraising. He's raised several million dollars. And Stein is one of the, I guess you would say, the leading faces or people on the Democratic bench in the state. And this is someone who I think has his eye on the executive mansion, whether that's in 4 years or 8 years. Same can be said for Dan Blue III. He's the son of a former Speaker of the House, and he is running for treasurer against Dale Falwell, who's a former number two or number three in the North Carolina House. And the treasurer's race is significant because you're talking about a position that controls, I believe it's the 26th largest pension in the world. So this affects, you know, half a million state employees and state retirees. So some significant races.
Voter turnout important in this race. Voter ID legislation. Currently, the court has said the state of North Carolina practiced racial discrimination in its voter ID law, also found racially discriminatory in redistricting. All that said, Dallas Woodhouse, the executive director of the North Carolina GOP, sent out an email directing the local elections commissions to follow the party line, which is to restrict voting when it comes to making the rules. His brother called him out and said Brad Woodhouse, a Democrat, called him out and called him a racist. And that's now in the news.
So following the ruling from the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, when, yes, some of the infrastructure set forth by Republicans has been deemed discriminatory against Black and Latino voters. And the Fourth Circuit threw out a state law. They said this is unconstitutional. You can't do this. It casts an unfair burden and disproportionately affects minorities. Republicans have gone back and they are trying to tinker with early voting at the county level. And what they're doing is they're using appointed positions. So the majority, all of these boards have a Republican majority, and they are trying to cut out Sunday early voting and continue to make early voting more difficult than it was 4 years ago.
WUNC Capital Bureau Chief Jeff DeBerry. Jeff, thank you.
Talk to you soon.
You can find out more about Jeff's reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we'll preview a local production of four-time Tony Award-winning musical Memphis on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.